Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in the listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Janitha, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Advances in the Treatment of Metastatic Melanoma. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations, and it's because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. Now, we have on the call today over 534 participants. That's a lot of you from all over the United States, from all different regions and counties. And we also have international participants from Canada, from India, Italy, Jordan, and the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world. And it's a really credit to all of you that you've chosen to spend the next hour with us. Today's program is made possible by a charitable contribution from Bristol-Myers Squibb, and I really want to thank them for their support of the program today. Now, I would like to turn your attention for a moment to all the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about our speakers and the topics they'll be covering, and there also is information about all of the different collaborating organizations as resources for all of you. There is an evaluation form as well, and I would ask you all to complete that evaluation form at the end of today's program. We very much appreciate your feedback. It helps to guide us to offer programs that really best meet your particular needs. So we take very seriously your recommendations. Indeed, the topic of today's program was really one that many of you have asked us to do this program, and so we're doing it. And we try to listen to your recommendations, and we try to implement them in the workshops that we do. And since we're planning many for this coming year, this is a very good time for you to give us your feedback. So please tell us what you want, and we'll try very hard to do that. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. Our first speaker is Dr. Jed Walchuk. Dr. Walchuk is Director, Immunotherapy Clinical Trials, Associate Director, Ludwig Center for Cancer Immunotherapy. He's Associate Attending Physician, Melanoma Sarcoma Service. He's also Associate Director, Medical Oncology Hematology Fellowship Program at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and he's Associate Professor of Medicine, Weill Medical College of Cornell University. Dr. Walchuk is going to present an overview of metastatic melanoma, current standard of care, and new treatment approaches. It's my delight to turn this program over to Dr. Walchuk.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. I really appreciate the invitation to speak on this conference today, and I thank all the listeners for joining in. Also, welcome to my two colleagues, who I'm delighted to have with me today. As many of you know, this has really been an extraordinary couple of years in the development of new therapies for the treatment of metastatic melanoma. And I'm going to leave the discussion of the treatment of early melanomas to my colleague, Dr. Slingluff, next, and confine my comments to really treatment of advanced metastatic melanoma. Up until a few years ago, there really were very few effective treatments for the majority of people with metastatic melanoma. Those were either high-dose interleukin-2, which is still used in some instances to treat people with advanced melanoma because it does have a track record of inducing durable responses which can last 10 years or more in some patients. But it is sometimes a difficult treatment to give, and since it benefits a small fraction of people who are treated, we certainly have always been looking for other things to use for the treatment of this disease. The other options for the treatment of melanoma in the past included a variety of different standard chemotherapies, which despite the fact that some patients did have meaningful regressions from chemotherapy, very few of those were durable. An improvement in overall survival, which is what we strive for, was never really reached with chemotherapy. And then fast forward to the past 4 or 5 years when two very important changes happened in the way that we think about treatment for melanoma. The first was a really deep division of the fact that treatment for melanoma has to be considered two ways. Treatments that target the tumor directly, that attempt to kill the melanoma cells directly, and treatments that target the patient, specifically the patient's immune system. And these are certainly not excluding of each other. They're not treatments that you have to choose one or the other and forget about, you know, whatever you don't choose, but rather they are two ways of thinking about the same problem, and many people may in fact receive both kinds of therapy at one time or another. And there have been significant scientific advances in both of these areas. The first of which is understanding what genetic changes take place when a normal melanocyte in the skin turns into a melanoma cell. And one of the changes that was recognized as a result of some research done as part of the Cancer Genome Project was the discovery of a mutation in a gene called BRAF, that's BRAF, which seems to occur in about 50% of patients with melanoma. And it's almost the same mutation or genetic change that happens in the melanomas in almost half of the patients. Now, this is not a mutation that a patient inherits from their parents. It's a mutation that occurs because of an interaction between the patient's skin cells and the environment. So it's not a transmissible mutation. And once this mutation was recognized and its role in driving the growth of melanoma cells was substantiated, many different groups began to look for ways to inhibit this BRAF mutated protein. And several medicines entered clinical trials, and one of which we now know as vemurafenib. And vemurafenib is a selective inhibitor of the BRAF gene. It was approved by the U.S. FDA last summer for the treatment of metastatic melanoma, specifically metastatic melanoma that has the BRAF mutation in it. It's very important to stress that despite the fact that this drug is very effective in patients whose melanomas have the BRAF mutation, it should not be used in melanomas that have not been shown to have the mutation, because there is the potential for this drug to accelerate the growth of melanomas that don't have a BRAF mutation. Now, the phase 3 clinical trial data for the vemurafenib, which Dr. Schuchter will go into some of the details later of how these clinical trials work, really showed that patients lived longer. What we've learned in addition is that these responses, when they happen, they do occur in most of the patients that are treated with vemurafenib, but that they don't last for many years, like immunotherapy responses last. They tend to last on average about 7 months, and then relapses begin to occur. Now, that's an average. There are some people who relapse earlier than 6 or 7 months. There are some people who relapse later than 6 or 7 months. There's really no way to tell at baseline yet how long a person is going to have a response to vemurafenib. One thing we do know is that when patients respond, it can happen quickly. Often patients will describe feeling better within days after starting vemurafenib. And then there are some side effects of this medicine. You need to be carefully examined by a dermatologist because other changes in the skin can occur, rashes or even low-grade forms of squamous cell cancer on the skin can occur. So any new pink dots on the skin need to be shown to a dermatologist. But vemurafenib is an important addition and can cause rapid resolution of symptoms in patients whose melanomas have the BRAF mutation. Now, one of the things that we've learned recently is that there's another protein in the same pathway that BRAF is in, and that protein is called MEK. And by blocking MEK, we might be able to get more mileage out of the responses to vemurafenib and other BRAF inhibitors. At ASCO, the American Society for Clinical Oncology meeting this year, there was some data presented about combining a different BRAF inhibitor, not vemurafenib, but rather dubrafenib, with a a MEK inhibitor, and I'll let Dr. Schuchter go into a little bit about that, since those medicines are still really in the clinical trial setting. But there is the possibility that combining a MEK inhibitor with a BRAF inhibitor could lead to additional efficacy and could lead to less side effects. Now, the other big advance that's taken place really has been in immunotherapy. Of course, we know that IL-2 is a standard approach for patients with metastatic melanoma. But about a year ago, a drug called ipilimumab, which is an antibody that blocks a very important pathway that keeps T cells from becoming fully activated, has been shown to be effective. And so, as you know, T cells are part of the immune system that are very important in our body's defenses against infections and cancer. And T cells, like any other cell in the body, are controlled by positive signals and negative signals. There are things that get T cells activated, but there are things that shut them off. And the goal is to maintain sort of an equilibrium between pluses and minuses, a yin and a yang. And ipilimumab blocks one of these checkpoint pathways that keeps T cells from getting too activated. And that's a good thing, because if a T cell gets too activated, then people could develop diseases like rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or Crohn's disease, which are called autoimmune diseases. So it's important that our bodies have normal inhibitory mechanisms to keep the immune system from getting too activated. Ipilimumab is a drug that blocks this inhibitory pathway temporarily to allow the immune system to become a bit more activated than it otherwise would, so perhaps it could see melanoma and respond to it. The analogy that we like to use is that ipilimumab cuts the brakes on T cells, if T cells could be considered a moving car. And so what you're allowing the car to do is to accelerate a little bit more than it otherwise would. Now, ipilimumab, just like vemurafenib, was shown to extend overall survival in patients with melanoma, but it doesn't matter whether or not people have a BRAF mutation or not, because, again, immunotherapy doesn't target the tumor directly. It targets the patient and the patient's immune system, and then the patient's immune system goes out and has an effect on the tumor. And that should change our expectations in terms of when we would see an improvement in symptoms from immunotherapy, because unlike the BRAF inhibitor, which stops an important pathway that directly drives the melanoma cells, the ipilimumab and other immunotherapies may take longer to work. People may, in fact, feel worse before they get better. This has been very tricky as we went through the clinical trials for ipilimumab, but we now have an idea about how to understand the responses to immunotherapy, what time frames to expect. That it may not be days or weeks. It may be several months before people respond to immunotherapy, and that gives us a better idea about how to judge the efficacy of medicines like ipilimumab. Now, another important difference between ipilimumab and, say, a BRAF inhibitor like vemurafenib is that the responses to ipilimumab tend to be quite durable because when you have the immune system involved, it's a dynamic organ which is controlling the cancer by shaping itself around it and learning what the cancer cells look like. We all know that we're vaccinated as babies, and our bodies tend to remember those vaccine responses for decades. We hope that the same is true as our immune systems learn to recognize melanoma after treatment with ipilimumab or IL-2. And for IL-2, we know that some people who respond to IL-2 respond for more than 10 years. So this idea of durability with the immune system is very important. And naturally, the next step that we're thinking about is combining these two approaches together, because we've got one class of treatments that targets the immune system, and one class of drugs that targets the cancer cell directly. And so should we be able to marry those together? That is the focus for clinical trials right now, because this is a question when you combine two new medicines together that really needs to be answered in a very careful and safe way in clinical trials. And we are doing such clinical trials now, which Dr. Schuchter will explain more about in a few moments. So the takeaway message that I want to have for the treatment of advanced melanoma is that we have two new medicines approved in the past year and a half after having about a 13-year period of time with no new medicines approved in the U.S. I anticipate that there are going to be several new ones in the coming years because of some of the new targeted therapies like the MEK inhibitor, which could help the BRAF inhibitors work, could even help with melanomas that have other mutations in them, which I'm sure Dr. Schuchter will get to. But there are other immunotherapies like medicines that block another braking mechanism, which is called PD-1. That are now in clinical trials. And so we really have quite a lot of enthusiasm and optimism for what the future looks like. We know we've helped some people in the past few years, but we know we have to do more. We need even more effective therapies, and that's where clinical trials come in. So at that point, I'm going to turn over the program to Dr. Slingluff, who's the next speaker, to talk about the surgical management of melanoma.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Walchuk, for really an excellent presentation, a rather elegant presentation, really explaining such complex terms to everybody and making it more understandable. Thank you so much. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. And our next speaker is Dr. Craig Slingluff, Jr., and Dr. Slingluff is Joseph Helms Farrow Professor of Surgery, Division of Surgical Oncology. He's Vice Chair for Research, Director, Human Immune Therapy Center, University of Virginia. And Dr. Slingluff is going to address the role of the surgical oncologist, questions to ask your doctor about surgery, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Slingluff.
Carolyn, thank you very much, and thanks to all of you who are in the audience. And again, as Dr. Wolchuk said, I'm delighted to be sharing this period of time with him and Dr. Schuchter. The role of the surgeon is critical in the early treatment of melanoma, but there also are some roles with metastatic melanoma, and I'll try to be very brief in summarizing those. So in treatment of early melanoma, a melanoma that is on the skin that's just been newly diagnosed, the main treatment we do, which is standard, is to cut out the melanoma with a margin of normal skin around it and deep under the tumor, and then also in most cases to do a biopsy of a lymph node that is the node most likely to get spread of that melanoma. We call that a sentinel lymph node biopsy. And this is generally a very well-tolerated operation, and people can do well with it. And if melanomas are diagnosed early, this is commonly all that needs to be done in terms of the treatment. But for more advanced melanomas, there is a higher risk of recurrence, and so sometimes additional treatments are done to try to prevent recurrence, which may be interferon, which is the approved treatment, or some experimental therapies. So when we are taking care of patients surgically, we end up obviously discussing those treatments, at least to introduce them to people, and then we work closely with our medical oncology colleagues to give the best advice to the patient about what's the next best step. There are circumstances then in later management of melanoma where the tumor may come back. It may come back in lymph nodes. It may come back in areas of the skin near the original tumor or further away, or it may come back in organs like the lungs or the liver or the brain, et cetera. When melanoma comes back in lots of different places, there's really not a meaningful role for surgery. And this is where these new exciting treatments that Dr. Wolchuk has just spoken about have a major role. But there are times when the surgeon can have a role in treating areas of spread of the tumor. The most straightforward is when it's spread to lymph nodes. We know that we can go in and take the rest of the lymph nodes out in an area. For example, if there's spread to a lymph node under the arm, we can take those nodes out, and there is a reasonable chance of doing well for, you know, for decades and basically being cured of disease. The risk of recurrence is higher than if that hadn't happened, but there is a chance of doing very well. So it's important to consider that as an option when somebody has recurrence in a lymph node. Also, if it comes back in the skin between where the melanoma started and the lymph nodes, there's also a strong rationale for doing surgery to try to remove those areas. When it's spread beyond that, then it becomes less likely to be beneficial. But there are cases where taking out areas of spread to vital organs or to the skin at faraway places can be beneficial. And that really falls into two different categories. One is if the tumors where the melanoma has spread are causing symptoms, then it may make sense to take them out. Examples are if melanoma is spread to the skin and is ulcerating the skin, bleeding, or at risk of doing those, then taking them out can be very helpful in minimizing those symptoms and making people feel better without putting them through a very big operation. Also, melanoma is one of the cancers that's more common than others to spread to the small intestine. People can have blockages of their intestine or bleeding, which can be very serious and life-threatening. It's not common that operating for those leads to cure, but it can lead to dramatic improvement in symptoms and an extended period of doing well clinically. With the new treatments that are available that Dr. Wolchuk has talked about, the role for surgery in those situations may even be more important, because if somebody has some symptoms from their melanoma, it may limit them from getting some of these other exciting therapies. But if we can treat the symptoms, then they become eligible for those additional therapies. So it's important that we as surgeons work closely with the medical oncologists and our patients as a team in taking care of the different circumstances that may arise. And that really is the next sort of main thing I want to talk about, and that is that it's, as we have more and more options for managing melanoma, we all who are taking care of patients need to talk and work together. It's ideal to have a team of physicians, and that would include the medical oncologist, the surgical oncologist, and usually a pathologist, in some cases radiation therapists, to work together to really think about all the best options for that given patient. So in addressing the sort of second category of things I wanted to go over in those questions to ask your doctor about surgery, one of the first things I think is to ask whether they're going to the treatment that the patient will be getting is being considered as part of a multidisciplinary team approach. Certainly there are times with very early melanoma where it's not really critical. If it's very early and you're very likely to be cured just with cutting it out, then that can be done in a pretty straightforward way. But once you get more advanced melanoma, especially if it's spread, then it's generally wise to have a team involved because of all these options that are available. The second thing in terms of talking to your doctor is obviously to make sure it's clear what kind of side effects may happen with surgery or without doing surgery and what alternatives there are to management. One of the things that is particularly common in treatment of melanoma that's spread to lymph nodes is that there can be issues with sort of complications from taking out the lymph nodes, and the main problem we see is swelling of an arm or a leg, for example, if the lymph nodes to the arm or the leg have been taken out. And those can be significant problems. They're generally manageable, but very important to understand before launching into aggressive treatment and to have good guidance about how to manage them. Another topic that I think is not often talked about enough, but is important, is in working with your doctor, you know, really whether it's a medical oncologist or surgeon, it's always reasonable to ask for second opinions, and especially in challenging situations, and you should never be afraid to ask your doctor to recommend somebody or to send information about you to a doctor that you've chosen, because none of us knows everything about how best to manage difficult scenarios, and there are always individual issues that each patient has to consider that can benefit from different points of view and even different ways of expressing the answers to the questions. Again, it's important to be able to communicate those sorts of things effectively. Finally, as we talk about standard surgical management and the new FDA-approved treatments, there are clinical trials that are available, and Dr. Schechter will talk in more detail about them, but I would just say in communicating with your physicians, it's important to ask them what kinds of clinical trials are available, because some of the new advances we've seen, they've all come from clinical trials, and some people got those treatments early and may have benefited. There are also risks to trials, and it's important to understand both the potential benefits and the risks, and to be aware of all the options available to you. I think that covers really the main things I wanted to go over. I look forward to having people ask questions, and happy to answer anything that I can.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Slingleff. Really an excellent presentation, and very informative in terms of the role of surgery and how to consider that. And also the whole issue of really communicating with healthcare team and the permission for everyone on the call to seek a second opinion. And it's very, very helpful information. So thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Lynn Schechter. Dr. Schechter is professor of medicine, the University of Pennsylvania. She's chief hematology oncology division, program leader, melanoma and cutaneous malignancies program at the Abramson Cancer Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Schechter is going to address clinical trial updates, and we've just recently had a meeting at ASCO. So she's going to talk at American Society of Clinical Oncology, so she's going to provide updates, and how research contributes to your treatment options, and managing side effects and pain and your quality of life concerns. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Dr. Schechter.
Thank you so much, Carolyn, and thank my co-speakers for setting me up for this discussion, and also like to extend my welcome to the participants. This is an important part of your care and gathering new information and education about your disease. So I do want to start with an update from the American Society of Clinical Oncology meeting, and every year, about 40,000 oncologists, surgical oncologists, cancer researchers gather to hear the latest information. And again this year, melanoma, management of melanoma, new treatments was a focus of a number of sessions. And Dr. Wolchuk really has eloquently already discussed many of these new treatments. And I would just focus on three areas. Most of the papers focused on patients with metastatic disease. So we talked about that at the beginning. A metastatic melanoma, by our definition, is melanoma that's traveled through the bloodstream to a distant site. So that's considered stage 4 melanoma, and most of the clinical trials focus on patients with either stage 4 melanoma at a distant site or something we call locally advanced stage 3 that may not be amenable to surgery. So that is where patient could have bulky lymph nodes that may not be able to be operated on, and we do consider giving systemic therapy in those situations. Those are two broad approaches, again, which is one targeted therapy, and that was looking specifically at the BRAF inhibitors. So there was an update on vemurafenib, and that's the FDA-approved BRAF inhibitor, also known as Zelboraf. And that study, the update was to compare vemurafenib to standard chemotherapy. And with longer follow-up, it continues to show that the vemurafenib is really superior to chemotherapy and that it clearly prolonged overall survival of patients who received this therapy. So this was really good news, and additional safety data was presented that this medication does seem to be very well tolerated with few side effects. And in talking about quality of life and if anybody is using these medications, the main thing is really to looking at your skin for any unusual changes, and in particular that the medication vemurafenib can sensitize patients to the sun and can and cause a very significant sunburn. So particularly in the summer months, for patients who are taking vemurafenib, is to be very cautious about using sunscreen and protective clothing and seeking shade. In addition to the vemurafenib, which we were very excited about, as Dr. Walchup mentioned, a study that is the GSK version of the BRAF inhibitor, dabrafenib, was also presented in combination with the MEK inhibitor. And again, these are not FDA-approved drugs, but the results that were presented were very, very exciting and showed a very high response rate. When we say response rate, at least 50% of the patients had shrinkage of their tumor and substantial shrinkage and very a long survival compared to our more usual treatments, and fewer side effects. So this was really remarkable that we could add a second medication, so adding a MEK inhibitor to a BRAF inhibitor. Not only do we see the same significant results in terms of activity against melanoma, but also that there are fewer side effects. So to combine two targeted agents, get wonderful results, and have fewer side effects almost never happens in oncology. And there's very elegant science as to why that could happen, which I won't go into today, but it was really predicted based upon how these drugs work, how they affect normal cells versus cancer cells, and why we might see this complication of a non-serious type of skin cancer that can occur as a result of the BRAF inhibitors. So we were really excited to learn about combining the two agents and that they were very effective and fewer side effects. There was also a study of just looking at a MEK inhibitor, so the GSK MEK inhibitor, trabatinib, and that study was compared to chemotherapy, and that also showed that a single agent MEK inhibitor, which is used in patients that have a BRAF mutation, was also highly effective. So this is a lot of complicated language and alphabet soup, but if you could imagine that you have a round circle and a bullseye in the middle, which is the nucleus, these proteins, BRAF and MEK, sit in between the outside of a circle and the target in the middle, and these agents disrupt the normal pathway. And so as Dr. Walchup mentioned, patients have their tumor tested, see if the BRAF gene is broken or not, and if broken, then these types of therapies are appropriate. So a series of studies were presented and also showed that these medications can be useful in patients who have brain metastasis from melanoma. So that is a site where melanoma can travel to, and this these studies showed that taking these agents can be, the BRAF inhibitors can be useful in patients with broken BRAF gene whose melanoma has traveled to the brain. So very exciting to show the continued activity, safety, and building upon the results of using a single agent BRAF inhibitor. I think because of time, Dr. Walchup really addressed the exciting information about the PD-1 inhibitor. So I'll just say that PD-1 inhibitors is another way to make the immune system stronger. Sometimes the T cells can get exhausted and aren't as effective as they could be. You can imagine the gas tank and the fuel has run out. And so the PD-1 can actually make these T cells, refuel them, recharge them. So there were a series of papers showing that the PD-1 antibody, one made by BMS, was very active in patients with melanoma with a 28% response rate, and again, very well tolerated with very few side effects, and then very preliminary information by the Merck PD-1 antibody, which also looked really encouraging. So I would just say a continued enthusiasm from the ASCO meeting about these new approaches to therapy. And as our previous speakers have mentioned, consideration of a clinical trial in any stage of melanoma is really important, and this is how one can get access to some of these newest agents. And a clinical trial doesn't mean that a patient has to consider a placebo or no treatment, or that their insurance company won't pay for it. So I always should consider a clinical trial and discuss this with your physician, and other sites can give you information about the availability of clinical trials. I wanted to just briefly mention also adjuvant therapy, because this was discussed at the annual meeting and important for us to give you an update on that. So patients who have stage 3 melanoma, melanoma that has traveled to a lymph node, patient has had surgery, we do consider giving treatment after their surgery to prevent a recurrence of melanoma. This is called adjuvant therapy. And the only FDA-approved treatment is high-dose interferon. And there was a study presented at ASCO which used compared biochemotherapy, which is a very intensive short-course treatment to give interleukin-2, interferon, and 3 chemotherapy drugs, and compared that treatment to standard high-dose interferon. This study is 10 years in the making. It began 10 years ago. It was not the easiest trial to accrue patients to, and the results showed that those patients with stage 3 melanoma who were treated with biochemotherapy had a reduced relapse rate or disease-free survival compared to patients who received high-dose interferon. Now, this is a therapy that has a lot of side effects. It does require inpatient stay. It does require physicians and nurses that are highly skilled in the delivery of this treatment. But the other important point is that we didn't see, or they didn't present, that the overall survival of a patient was improved. So we took this study to mean that it is an option for patients with stage 3 melanoma. It doesn't change the standard of care for patients with stage 3 melanoma in terms of adjuvant therapy, but something that could be considered in somebody who's young, maybe at high-risk disease, high risk for recurrence, and maybe interferon's not the appropriate treatment. Important to note that all of the therapies that Dr. Wolchok talked about are now being considered for patients with earlier stages of disease. So we have described significant activity of these agents for stage 4 or advanced melanoma, and now there are clinical trials that explore ipilimumab for stage 3 melanoma. The current national study for patients with stage 3 melanoma is ipilimumab versus interferon, and that's a good study for patients to enroll on. And then these targeted agents, the BRAF inhibitors, are also being taken into the adjuvant setting. So this is a very different time. We have new agents to consider for earlier stages of disease. And I think, as Dr. Slingoff mentioned, it's really key that you have ongoing dialogue, you know, with your physicians, with your healthcare team, to understand what's the right option for you at any particular point in the course of your illness, and to always consider a clinical trial, as these are, as I mentioned, how we get access to the newer and newer agents. I'll just briefly conclude by saying that an important part of this is really maintaining your high quality of life and minimizing side effects related to treatment, and also managing symptoms related to melanoma. And again, this is where a comprehensive team approach is necessary. And some of these new therapies have very unique side effects, and side effects that oncologists have not traditionally had to handle. So I've mentioned that the vemurafenib, the BRAF-targeted agents, have this really unusual skin toxicity. So that requires the oncologist to really be examining the skin, your skin, as you're taking these medications, partnering with dermatologists. And then the ipilimumab causes this unique set of immune adverse events or autoimmune complications. So we're beginning to have to tackle problems in the endocrine system, problems with arthritis, problems with the thyroid. So very vague symptoms of fatigue, maybe some joint pain, symptoms that we could have thought in the past were related to melanoma could actually be side effect related to the treatment. So again, making list of your current symptoms, making sure that your providers have a good understanding of what's changed and anything that you've noticed in terms of new symptoms or findings on your body or any new abnormalities that you're concerned about. I want to end there because I think such an important part of these teleconferences is hearing from you and hearing your questions. So I'll conclude there, Carolyn. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Schachter, for just a very comprehensive presentation and really for updating everybody about the, some of the latest information from the American Society of Clinical Oncology, following up with Dr. Walchuk's presentation and Dr. Slingluff's as well. And we now do have time for questions, and we have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Trinitha to bring all of our speakers on board now, and Trinitha will explain to you how to queue up for questions. And Trinitha, why don't we let the questions begin then?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. For those of you on the web, you may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Our first question is from Allison S. Your question, please.
Yes. Why during the treatment of your voice it will get worse before it gets better? I sort of missed that part. And also, I'm the patient family member, and he recently had a soreness of his thigh. He described it is like a toothache, but not really pain, and it has been bothering for days. He is on stage 4 and has a distance metastasized to several vital organs. And, you know, he just did his – he was failed with –
What's your question?
Yeah, and is the soreness part of a – part of the side effect change of the symptoms of your voice is lumima.
Okay, well, thank you. Those are important points and concerns that you've raised. Dr. Walchuk, would you begin with that question? Dr. Walchuk will answer it in a general way, and then we hope you'll take it back to your treating healthcare team. Dr. Walchuk?
Yeah, that's important. I think that it's a great question why people may get worse before they get better. And I think it just has to do with the time that it takes for many people to respond to ipilimumab. Because, again, we're not treating the tumor directly with this medicine. We're treating the immune system. And then the immune system has to go out and treat the tumor. And so that may take a few weeks or a few months. And so in that period of time, the melanoma may continue to grow and cause symptoms, just as it was before. So we're not saying that the ipilimumab is going to cause the disease to get worse. What we're saying is that the disease may follow its natural path to getting worse as the immune system gets revved up to try and treat it. Does that make it more clear?
Excellent. And then the soreness, in the mouth area?
I'm not sure that it was in the mouth. I think that the caller was referring to the tumor hurting like a toothache, but it sounded like the tumor was somewhere else. I think it has to do with the fact that the tumor was perhaps becoming more symptomatic as we were waiting for the treatment to work, if I understood the question correctly.
I think you're correct. And anyone else want to add to that? It's an important question, certainly.
I think that's the right answer.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for that excellent question. And we, again, hope that you'll take what Dr. Walchuk has said back to your treating healthcare team and see if they can be of further help to you. But that was an excellent question. Thank you. Our next question?
Thank you. Our next question is from Ellie E. Your question, please.
Well, thank you for your wonderful presentation. Mine is a specific question regarding uveal melanoma that has metastasized to the liver. And my husband has started targeted therapy, chemoembolization, LC beads implanted directly into the liver. And I wondered if there was anything else on the horizon that we could think of in addition to this or as a backup in case this does not work for him.
Ellie, thank you for that excellent question. Dr. Schachter, would you want to address this?
Sure. So, thank you, Eli. This is the uveal melanoma, for the other people on the call, is a type of melanoma that starts in the eye, and it does have this predilection for going to the liver. And so it does make sense to be doing these very specific liver-directed therapies. But amazing new information, and I also was presented at ASCO, is about new genes that are broken in uveal melanoma. A gene called BAP1. And so there is an idea that MEK inhibitors, MEK inhibitors, could be useful in uveal melanoma that has traveled to the liver. So targeted therapies with these agents that shut down pathways may be relevant. So I think that starting with the liver-directed therapy is a good idea, and often the melanoma from the when it's traveled from the eye is really confined to the liver, and you can give that treatment an opportunity to work, but meanwhile look into whether these some of these other targeted agents might be of interest. So in the MEK inhibitor pathways might be particularly relevant to consider.
Excellent. Thank you. And we do have a question in front of our online participants, which really has to is a family member and is someone who actually is concerned about if they have a family member with melanoma. What about their own? What should they do in terms of their own screening and their risk for developing melanoma? And I wonder if Dr. Slingloff, could you address that question?
Sure. Yeah, so melanoma does have some inherited predisposition, but it doesn't explain most of the melanoma risk that we see. But nonetheless, it's worth considering that if there is if there's someone in your family with melanoma, then you may be at higher risk. The decisions about what to do with that knowledge are a little different than things like having a breast cancer gene inheritance, for example, where sometimes prophylactic surgery is done. We can't take off all of our skin, for example, to prevent melanoma. But the main things are to be careful about sun exposure and to be screened ideally by a dermatologist on a regular basis and to look at your own skin to look for anything that's suspicious and to have it addressed promptly. That's really good advice for everybody, but it's particularly true if there's a family member that has melanoma. And just as a reminder, in terms of prevention of melanoma, people think about sunscreen, and sunscreen is part of the picture, but the best protection from the sun is a building, meaning being inside, especially during the hottest part of the day. And the second best protection is protective clothing, and there's a lot of clothing that's available that has rated SPF factors, and that's going to be more reliable than sunscreen because sunscreen wears off over time. So those are the main things one can do, and then obviously to be supportive of your family member who is dealing with the melanoma.
Excellent. Thank you. We have another question from one of our online participants, the question is, are any of these new treatments available for NED stage 4 patients, or what is recommended once a person has NED? Dr. Walchuk?
I think that stage 4 NED, for no evidence of disease, is a very challenging question, and there really is no single right answer. Right now, these patients who have had all of their disease either removed or completely treated with another therapy are at risk of recurrence, but then we know that there are some patients, for example, those who've had a lung metastasis removed. There's a population of those patients, depending upon the study, between 10 and 20% will never have a recurrence without any further therapy. And so this is really an open question. Some clinical trials that are done in the adjuvant setting, the after surgery to remove primary melanoma and the lymph nodes, will sometimes allow for patients who are stage 4 NED, but that's not the majority. It really is a good question. Right now, what we do is, first of all, look for clinical trials interferon has been offered to these patients, but as far as I know, and maybe my colleague can correct me, there's never been a formal study of patients who are stage 4 NED with high-dose interferon, or with the understanding that those patients may never have a relapse. Vigilant observation with initiation of treatment at the first sign of recurrence would be another path to follow.
Anyone want to add anything? Yes.
Yeah, I would just agree with Dr. Wolchuk in general, and I guess maybe even state even more strongly that this is a population where, because there is not a clear answer, clinical trials are really the a critical component of what may be appropriate. And there are a lot of trials that are available for resected stage 4 patients. And I think we're going to be seeing some of the new targeted therapies. I mean, we are seeing them becoming available in trials for that group as well. But there's still not a clear answer about what the best thing to do is yet.
And there is another question from one of our online participants as well. Is there any type of lymph node replacement or transplant research being done? Dr. Schechter?
Well, that's a sling off question.
Dr. Sling off.
I realized I had my name on it. I don't know of any. But it's a very good question. I think it's the issue of taking out lymph nodes and the potential downside of that mostly relates to lymphedema, to risk of lymphedema, to leg swelling, and that's it may be that the absence of the lymph nodes themselves is an issue, but that our body has lots of other lymph nodes. But the main thing is that the lymphatic channels that carry fluid from our extremities gets blocked off, and so fluid backs up, and that puts us at more risk of infection. So it would be great if there were technologies or techniques to kind of bypass those lymphatic channels. There's nothing that's standard. There has been a little bit of work done in trying to figure out ways to do that, but there's nothing that's currently standard. What a great thing to do.
Great audience, fantastic questions. Then we have one other from one other online participant as well. What are the thoughts on GM-CSF leukine as adjuvant therapy? I have been on it for 3 years. Dr. Volchuk?
I actually think I need to pass the potato here again to Craig, because he's actually done some studies with GM-CSF, and I think he is probably the best qualified of the three of us to answer.
Well, Dr. Slingwell, then, okay.
I'll do my best. So there's been work done with GM-CSF in a number of different trials and different settings, given in different ways. And the work started with studies that were done 15 or 20 years ago by Glenn Dranoff and others who were at Hopkins at the time, and suggesting that GM-CSF could be given with vaccines and make vaccines work better, and also work that's been done by others suggesting that it may be useful just given systemically, which is probably the way that the questioner has been getting it administered. And there was a trial done through the Eastern Cooperative Oncology Group. It's a national cooperative group studying cancer trials. It was led by David Lawson, asking whether GM-CSF improved survival in patients who had melanoma that was at high risk for recurrence, in stage 3B, 3C, and 4 primarily. That was also built into that was a question about a particular vaccine trial and seeing if that would be helpful. The overall result of that study has been presented at the ASCO meeting, I think it was a year ago. But those data are not finally published yet. But the pictures to date is that there's not an improvement in overall survival for the whole patient population getting GM-CSF. But in people with stage 4 disease, there was some evidence that suggested there might be a benefit. It's not statistically convincing yet, but it raises that possibility. So I think there's still somewhat of an open question about that. The part of the appeal is it's a very well-tolerated treatment, as this person who asked the question probably knows. And so it's one of the outstanding questions. We and others have done studies looking at the role of GM-CSF given as part of a vaccine. And again, there's debate there, but our data suggest that it's not helpful in that setting. But that's a different issue than when it's given subcutaneously for the whole body.
Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been outstanding today, just really an outstanding group of speakers. And thank you. And actually also you role model that whole interdisciplinary team in which you each refer to each other and the way you communicate with all the audience. So just a wonderful also role model for all of everyone on the call. I also want to thank all of you who've asked such wonderful questions, both on the telephone and online, and all of you who've been listening. I want to remind all of you this is a one-hour program, and that planning a program like this, we recognize that you have many needs that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour. So as we approach our conclusion, we haven't ended yet, but as we can approach, I wanted to say a few things just so as resources for you to continue with. First of all, I do want to let you all know about a new resource. It's an online collaborative resource called facesofskincancer.org. And it's an interesting website for you to visit, and it actually is a place where you can go and share your story, or you can view videos or submit your story to that. And so it's a wonderful place for people affected by skin cancer and melanoma to really get some additional information and also to talk a little about their own experience. So I encourage all of you to take advantage of this new website. The other thing I want to acknowledge to all of you is that although this program is soon to end, This workshop is part of many of the services that Cancer Care offers, and all of the services at Cancer Care are free and available to all of you, and they aren't just about the workshops. We also offer, we have a staff of over 35 master's level trained oncology social workers, and we provide a host of services. And that includes practical and financial assistance to counseling services or a chance to talk with someone about your concerns. We have telephone support groups and online support groups. Of course, we have these workshops and various publications and fact sheets and, of course, a very active website. Most importantly, as we approach concluding this program, I don't want anyone to think that you're alone in coping with metastatic melanoma, with cancer. I don't want anyone to think that you're alone with this. I want you to know that you're now part of a community of support, and we are simply a telephone call away, and you can call us at 1-800-813-HOPE or visit our website at www.cancercares.org. Again, I want to wish you all a very fine day, and thank you all for your participation today.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect, and have a wonderful day.